The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Now, coming up, investigative journalist Julie Kelly is going to join me. We're going to talk about the raid in Mar-a-Lago, about January 6th, and about the Whitmer kidnapping case, all of which happen to be connected. I'll reveal how voter integrity laws are finally chasing shady and compromised election workers out of their positions. This is a good thing. And I'll show why Achilles is both subhuman and superhuman. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Guys, I'm really delighted to welcome to the podcast. Well, welcome back to the podcast, the one and only Julie Kelly. She is the go-to person on the issues that we're going to talk about, which is the FBI, the double standards of the Biden DOJ, what needs to be done. Julie, thank you for joining me. Delighted to have you as always. It seems to me that this raid on Mar-a-Lago, which perhaps the Democrats thought would be a way to smear Trump, has kind of backfired on them. And I wonder if you agree with that assessment. And how you think this is going to play out.
Hi, Dinesh. Thank you, as always, for having me on and for covering my work. I do think it's backfiring. I think even some Democrats and left-wing pundits are recognizing that. Look, this is an egregious, unprecedented move, and there needed to be some real solid justification for it and some public explanation. But if what's we're being told and what is being reported by both the Trump camp and even federal authorities leaking to news outlets. If he was indeed cooperating and they somehow thought he had classified material in his possession, they were already working with Trump and his lawyers to figure that out. So there's really nothing that justifies, it seems, this judge who we now know is tied to Clinton world and to raids a president, former president and potential rival of Joe Biden, raid his house, FBI agents for hours, asking apparently for the Mar-a-Lago people to shut off security cameras, not give them a copy of the warrant, looking for some sort of classified documents. That's the ruse anyway. I think this has really fired up even people, Dinesh, who have been completely silent on the abuses of the FBI related to anyone, any Trump supporter or the president himself.
I mean, that has been, it might be a way for people who don't know a lot about the Whitmer kidnapping, haven't followed closely January 6th. Of course, they might have gotten a whiff of the January 6th hearings, but we know how rigged and one-sided those are. A couple of interesting details that seem to have emerged. Trump said in one of his statements, I think yesterday, that that the FBI knew where these boxes were. And that, in fact, they had asked the Trump people via the Secret Service to put an additional padlock on that storage spot, which was, in fact, done. So that when the FBI sort of broke the lock, they were breaking the exact same lock that they had asked to have installed, which, again, seems to suggest that this is not, you know, a legalistic matter of a judge signing off. It's an orchestrated theatrical move that just seems to have not played out kind of the way they expected.
When you say theatrical, that is exactly it, Dinesh. Regardless of the reasons, of course, we have not seen the details. We know that the judge is politically compromised. But this is part of the theatrics, part of what the January 6th committee is doing. This is to produce all these optics to justify when this Justice Department, which I feel very strongly and confidently, will indict Trump. For something. I believe it will be related to January 6th. I still believe this raid has something to do with January 6th. But this is to create the optics to convince the public that this was a serious, legitimate investigation into Donald Trump. And here's the indictment. Here are the charges that we're arresting him for. And I think this is working on the left for the most part, because you can see how they're all spun up about this. But Dinesh, the danger for the Democrats and the Biden regime, Merrick Garland, is they have set expectations that Donald Trump will be charged, arrested, and charged. If he isn't, the Democrats are going to pay a political price. They have ratcheted this up so far that they almost have no alternative but to charge him with something before the election. And so I think that this is the risk that they're taking. They've created it, though, and I think this is all where this is headed.
You know, Julie, I'm beginning to think you're right. Debbie and I have been having this internal discussion where I've said that the basis for this is so flimsy. You know, you've got Trump giving a speech, a public speech, where there's absolutely no exhortation, go inside the Capitol, take over the place, none of that. Instead, march peacefully and patriotically. So the best that the January 6th committee has come up with, internal, you know, emails in which one advisor exhorts him to do X and another advisor exhorts him to do Y. So my view has been there's nothing for these guys to go on here. But Debbie's view is that that doesn't really matter. What matters is the political calculation. So let's take a pause because I don't want to rush your answer. We'll be right back. I want you to talk about why you think they feel like they have no choice but to push forward.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and due to your incredible support, the original My Slippers are almost completely sold out. As a special thank you, I am launching my brand new all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98. This is a limited-time offer, so go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get all my new footwear for as low as $29.98. My all-season slippers are made with my exclusive four-layer design that you won't find in any other slipper. They're finished with a breathable fabric so you can wear them all year round. And my new slides and sandals are made with patented impact gel, making them ultra comfortable and extremely durable. I guarantee they'll be the most comfortable footwear you'll ever own. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen now to get your very own all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98 with your promo code. This is an introductory offer and it won't last long, so order now.
I'm back with Julie Kelly. Julie, I was asking you about the fact that, you know, the Democrats can't stop themselves, it seems. They tried two impeachments, they tried Russia collusion, and it looks like they're on a quest in search of a crime. They have their target, they have their suspect, they have the person they want to indict, and it's just a matter of what do we get this guy on. And interestingly, it seems that so many of the pundits in the media and so on are sort of brazen disregard of law.
They really are. So going back to what you said at the end of the first segment, Debbie is right. I'm sure she'll be happy to hear that. But of course, she's seen how this plays out in places like Venezuela. But also we see that this DOJ is producing all of these imaginary charges. I mean, you have this DOJ, Matthew Graves, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, who has charged about 20 Americans with seditious conspiracy. This is such a rare charge. There's not even sentencing guidance for it. No American has ever been convicted of it. Yet Matthew Graves managed to go to a grand jury in Washington, D.C., a city that voted 93% for Joe Biden, convince them that nonviolent people like the Oath Keepers, who walked into the building an open door, carried no weapons, assaulted no one, didn't even vandalize property, that they somehow are guilty of seditious conspiracy. So this Justice Department doesn't have to convince anyone except a grand jury in Washington, D.C., of these imaginary crimes. I mean, you have people going to jail for years on a charge of obstruction of an official proceeding, which I think is one of the counts that they are going to try to charge Trump with. This is a post-Enron law. In the past 20 years, it has never been used in this capacity to charge political protesters. Yet they are throwing people in jail, denying them bail, then sentencing them to years in prison on a nonviolent felony that had to do with tampering with evidence. So Debbie is right, and I told people for months after watching this, DOJ and the district court, by the way, there's no guardrails for these prosecutors. They have gotten away with flagrantly lying, not just to the grand jury, but to district court judges with no penalty. And so Matthew Graves, Lisa Monaco, the deputy AG, Obama loyalist, who's really running this show, they must be sitting in their offices laughing their butts off every day because they have gotten away with everything. And they're just building this case against Donald Trump.
Now, Julie, what I hear you saying is that the DOJ has found a fertile pasture, namely Washington, D.C. In a sense, it's like, from a judicial point of view, little Venezuela. You've mm-hmm. got judges who are swamp creatures. You've got juries who are, you know, sucking so hard at the federal, you know, teat, if you will, mm-hmm. that they are ideologically, they have ideological blinders on. And mm-hmm. now, and you're also saying that, look, there's no reason not to use the same recipe that the DOJ has been using for, you know, Guy Reffitt and the other January 6th defendants. But in this case, apply it to Trump. Charge him, try to get him in before a D.C. Jury where essentially all rules are out the window. It's not a jury of your peers. It's a jury of essentially people with Trump derangement syndrome. Is that what you're, am I correctly summarizing what you're saying?
I think that's a nice way of putting it, actually. These people are chomping at the bit to throw Trump supporters in jail. The DOJ is undefeated, Dinesh, before DC juries. I think we've had 8 or 9 jury trials. These jurors have come back with unanimous guilty verdicts on every single count for every single defendant in record time. In one case, a juror joked, "We spent more time ordering lunch than we did deciding if this person was guilty." This includes this very rare obstruction charge. They don't care what the facts and evidence are. The DC judges, the prosecutors, the jurors look January 6th as an encroachment on their personal fiefdom. I listened to the DC Chief Judge Beryl Howell say to someone, "You drove all the way from Texas to Washington, D.C. to participate in this?" Well, yes, because it's our nation's capital, and that is a constitutionally protected right. And here's the chief judge, an Obama appointee, of course, and she's also the one overseeing the grand juries, by the way, excoriating Americans for daring to come into their personal territory. So this is the viewpoint that they all have. Now, just imagine if they can get their hooks into Donald Trump, a grand jury, a jury, any one of these D.C. District Court judges, including the ones he's appointed, who, of course, will be recused under some pretend imaginary belief that they will be impartial or partial to Trump, which they will not be. So this is the environment that they have created. And by the way, every judge has denied change of venue motions, too. They know how highly biased the jury pool is, yet they will not allow trials to be moved out of D.C. This is what Donald Trump will be up against.
Let's take a pause. When we come back, I'd like to discuss what, if anything, can be done about all this. Food costs are skyrocketing, and according to industry sources, grocery stores across the U.S. are worried about food shortages. As a result, survival food is more important than ever. If you stockpile the wrong foods, you could be setting your family up to go hungry in a crisis? Well, now you can create your very own stockpile of the best-selling Four Patriots. That's the number four, Patriot Survival Food Kits. Four Patriot Survival Food Kits are a tremendous value. This is not ordinary food. This is delicious, nutritious, good for 25 years survival food. And customers rave about the flavor. Go to Four Patriots, the number four, patriots.com/Dinesh to get your 3-month survival food kit and your free gifts worth $273. And for a limited time, get $100 off your order. These survival food kits are famous for selling out, but now they're back and you'll get loaded up with free gifts when you get yours today. Go to 4patriots.com/Dinesh, grab your 3-month survival food kit, all your free gifts, and $100 off for a limited time. That's 4patriots.com/Dinesh. I'm back with investigative writer Julie Kelly, who has been covering this beat like no one else. Julie, I want to talk about a matter that's not unrelated, actually, because it might supply the original formula for the DOJ's action. And that is the resumption or the second trial that's going on now, just started. I believe jury selection is ongoing. This is for the two defendants who had a hung jury, or who were not convicted, but they were also not acquitted. We know that the other two defendants, I believe, were acquitted. Talk about what's happening in this sort of Whitmer round two, and connect it to what's happening with Trump, but also with January 6th.
So it's very interesting. So to your point, the DOJ has decided to retry two men accused of conspiring to kidnap and kill Gretchen Whitmer in 2020. The other two defendants, four of them went to trial in April, two were acquitted. These remaining two had hung juries, so DOJ is retrying them. Of course, this has to do with the heavy infiltration. Actually, the FBI came up with the whole plan, stitched this group together based on social media posts, had numerous informants working out of multiple FBI field offices, required approval at the highest level of DOJ and FBI. One agent testified in April. So they're retrying these men. What's interesting, Dinesh, is listening to jury selection on Tuesday. This is a heavily Trump-supportive area in Western Michigan. And you had jurors, and you had the judge ask about distrust in the government. And at one point, he asked jurors to raise their hands if they had heavy distrust in the government. And you could hear the judge's reaction. Now, just imagine, this is jury selection the day after these people found out that the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago. And my contention is that this is going to backfire on the government, that the DOJ and FBI have created such distrust that people who once were, you automatically, as people on the right, supporting the FBI and law enforcement, now will view them so skeptically and cynically that it could backfire in this trial and result in the acquittal of two more men that they insist are domestic terrorists, which, of course, they also say about January 6th. So it's an interesting thing that's happening at the same time.
So, Julie, you're raising a very interesting issue here, which is, well, quite frankly, jury nullification. I actually tweeted out yesterday that this is something that we on the conservative side should now seriously consider. This is not to say that you want to say up front, I'm doing it. You just need to do it. And by do it, what I mean is you're actually serving the cause of justice. First of all, it's legal. A jury can vote whichever way it wants. It is the ultimate authority in these situations. But number two, you're serving the cause of justice because you're undermining what I think has become the largest organized crime syndicate in the world, which is the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mm-hmm. We can't trust their evidence anymore. We can't trust what they say. So the presumption that they're telling the truth, the presumption that they're not planting evidence. I just saw yesterday someone saying about the Trump case, well, do you think the FBI planted evidence on Trump? And I'm like, well, why not? They were part of a Russia collusion narrative. That evidence was planted by the Clinton campaign. They knew about it. They went along with it. So this is not really an agency that deserves, let's just call it, a presumption of innocence, do they?
No, and it was funny, Dinesh, I tweeted this out at the same time you saw the blue check marks laughing that Trump would have thought or anyone would think the FBI planted evidence. You had a defense attorney in the Whitmer trial explaining how an FBI informant put materials for an explosive device, planted that bag in the truck of his defendant, his client. And when this client, the defendant, was arrested, the FBI confiscated those materials as evidence. This was happening at the same time. But it's dangerous, right, Dinesh? Because in a way, because we're opening our eyes to just how corrupt and dishonest this agency is. But when you have juries in more than or half the country who automatically distrust the government and the FBI, think of the ramifications of real crimes and what this means. So they're torching this trust and their integrity to take down Donald Trump, and they don't care about the ramifications for the country. And that's another serious consequence. And this is why these people are so dangerous.
Julie, as we close out here, let me ask you this question. It seems like while Republicans have been, particularly the so-called Republican establishment, very skittish about January 6th, as I know from 2000 Mules, very skittish about the issue of the election and election fraud. But most of those guys did rally to Trump's side on the Mar-a-Lago raid. How do you read that in terms of the willingness of a Republican Party to take on what seems to me, we're in a situation, I don't know if I would call it a national emergency, but we're somewhat close to that situation, and the Republican Party is the only party that can take it on. And my question to you is, will they?
I think the answer is probably no, Dinesh. And the reason why they're ignoring the rigged 2020 election in your film, the reason why they're ignoring the plight of 850 plus Trump supporters who've been rounded up, have their homes raided, incarcerated, and charged for January 6th is because then the question is, if they admit it's a problem or a crisis is a better word, what are they going to do about it? They have no solution. The solutions are drastic, right? Shutting down the DC U.S. Attorney's Office, dismantling the FBI, cutting off funding to DOJ across the country. They don't have the guts to do that. So they'll tinker around the edges. They'll write mean letters. They'll post some threatening tweets. But they don't want to admit, and your word is spot on, the crisis ahead, because they'll have to come up with solutions. And we just have not heard any from any GOP leaders.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for joining me. And there is a lot more to come on all this, but I think we are on the same page in terms of what we're facing and the seriousness with which we need to approach it. Thanks again, Julie Kelly. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dinesh.
From cringing at the prices at the pump to getting outrageous checks at your favorite restaurants, inflation is hitting us all where it hurts. And it really hurts. That's why I started using Upside. Now, Upside is an incredible app for anyone who buys gas, groceries, or dines out. With every purchase, I'm earning cash back thanks to Upside. It's almost too good to be true. The amount of money I've saved on gas while using Upside, and it's easy to use. To get started, download the free Upside app in the App Store or Google Play. Use my promo code Dinesh and get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. Next, claim an offer for whatever you're buying on Upside. Check in at the business, pay as usual with a credit or debit card, and get paid. You can earn 3 times more cash back with Upside than you can with credit card rewards or loyalty programs. You can cash out anytime to your bank account or other brands. Upside users are earning more than $1 million every week, and they have a 4.8 star rating on the App Store. So not only am I saving money on gas, but I get cash back in return. Download the free Upside app and use promo code Dinesh to get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. That's Upside on the App Store. One of the phrases I've coined in recent weeks is the 2000 Mules effect. What I mean by the 2000 Mules effect is the way in which the documentary is having an impact, not just in sort of the normal way, which is what's law enforcement going to do now. We see some, although in my view, grossly inadequate steps in that direction, but all kinds of other effects, the effect on showing independents and Democrats, what their own side has been doing. The effect of prodding the case for voter integrity laws, the effect of showing judges that the mechanisms used by the mules need to be carefully looked at. And as we saw in the case of Wisconsin, mail-in drop boxes are now illegal with very rare exceptions throughout the entire state. The court found them to be inconsistent with both the Constitution, the Wisconsin Constitution, and Wisconsin statutes. Now, a lot of states, Republican states mostly, are passing rules that make the behavior of election officials under certain circumstances a crime. So either a misdemeanor in some cases or a felony in the other. And the idea here was actually very well explained by a guy named Bobby Kaufman, who pushed a bill of this sort forward in Iowa. And he goes, the bill makes sure that future elections officials that commit election misconduct face the same punishment that you or I or the general public would face if we did the same thing. In other words, we hear a lot about voter fraud. Voter fraud is the voter doing something inappropriate, something that makes them vulnerable to being penalized. But what about election officials? What about election officials who engage in all kinds of shenanigans? Election officials who decide arbitrarily to bend the rules regarding drop boxes. Election officials who decide that they will provide, let's just say, for example, they'll take private money and decide to allocate that money to provide activist compensation for, quote, get out the vote efforts that just happen to benefit one political party. What about people who masquerade as election officials and tell voters, almost acting like they're authorities, you should do this, you should do that, but they're not election officials at all. And so what about people, election officials who promote ballot harvesting in places where ballot harvesting is not allowed, or they allow people to carry ballots who are specifically prohibited from being able to drop off or carry ballots? What about election officials, in other words, who don't play by the rules? Well, the answer is states are deciding, and we have a number of cases here. We have Iowa, we have Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas, West Virginia, Wyoming. Notice, overwhelmingly, these are Republican states. And what they're doing is they are, in some cases, increasing the penalty for election law violations by election officials. In other cases, they are criminalizing conduct that you can see. This is obviously flagrant misconduct. But what's funny and so telling is that the left is screaming about this. They're screaming about this because they're essentially saying, oh, this is going to have a very demoralizing effect on election officials. This is going to cause people not to want to be election officials in the first place. Well, no, what it's going to do is keep corrupt election officials away. It's going to intimidate them as they should be intimidated. And again, when you look at the laws themselves, you begin to see how reasonable they are. In Iowa, for example, the state's law passed in 2021, so actually before 2000 mules, it basically says election officials, A, need to maintain adequate voter lists. In other words, that's part of your job. Keep the lists clean. Number two, don't interfere with people performing their duties in or near a polling place. So again, you're not allowed, the polling place is sort of sacrosanct. You can't be getting in there and telling people how to vote or instructing them in how they should cast their ballot. So Roxana Moritz, who apparently was the chief election officer in Scott County, she decided to quit. She goes, when they signed that new law, I was done. It's too much anymore. The constant out to get us. Now, no one's really out to get her so much as they are out to make sure that our elections are free and fair. But these election officials have basically had the run of the place. They've been able to do pretty much whatever they want. They use this discretionary authority in many cases to try to tip the scales or advance their own preferred candidates. That practice is being now called into question. And this is why some election officials are feeling the heat, because they're being called out quite correctly. It's pretty colorful at the grocery store in the produce section, all the vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Well, our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Now, I don't eat anywhere near the 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies that I need, so Balance of Nature is the way I give my body what it needs to stay healthy. Debbie and I take those six little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. So variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I'm continuing my discussion of election officials who are now a little bit under the gun, only in the sense that states are passing laws prohibiting these election officials from doing things that they should not be doing in the first place. So this is, again, broadly speaking, the 2000 mules effect. Let's look at Alabama, for example. It's prohibiting election officials from, quote, soliciting, accepting, or using any donation in the form of money, grants, property, personal services from an individual or non-governmental entity for the purpose of funding election-related expenses. This is really very straightforward. Alabama is saying elections are the business of the state. The state pays for it. The state organizes it. We don't want private actors bringing their leverage in here, because if they give money, they're going to be able to stipulate what the money is used for. The classic example, of course, being Zuckerberg. He came with a lot of money in the 2020 election, but his money came with conditions. Number one, let's get our activists, left-wing activists, as it turns out, into the election offices. Number two, lots of more mail-in ballots. We want to be mailing these ballots out as much as we can. Number three, this money needs to go to paying for mail-in drop boxes. We need more of them, and the Zuckerberg people orchestrated it so that the more of them ends up in the heavily Democratic or urban areas. Think about it. I'm not saying that Zuckerberg knew about mules, but if there were no Zuckerberg-funded drop boxes, the mules, many of the mules, would have had no place to go to. In Kansas, the new law says that election officials cannot falsify information in a ballot custody affidavit. What's wrong with that? Shouldn't that be against the law? Of course it should. A new Texas law basically says that election judges face up to 2 years in jail if they enter information on affidavits or forms that they know to be false. So think about this. Again, the law could not be more reasonable. Let's say, for example, that you know someone's an illegal alien. They shouldn't be voting. But nevertheless, you fill out on the form and you're an election judge that they're a citizen and that they're actually qualified to vote. Well, you're knowingly violating the law. Shouldn't you be held accountable? Of course you should. In Arizona, county recorders and election officials are not allowed to deliver a mail-in ballot to someone who has not requested one for that election. Again, the law in Arizona is very clear. Mail-in ballots aren't sent out like confetti. It's not just like we have the voter rolls, let's mail out the ballots. You want a mail-in ballot, you have to request one, and that's the law. So election officials who flout that law, try to get around it, try to say things like, listen, why don't we just blast out a bunch of ballots to federal workers, for example. Let's blast out ballots to nursing homes, even if there are no requests. You're flouting the law. And all that Arizona is doing is basically saying, look, if you do that, you're not going to be able to do that with impunity. There's also a felony prosecution in Arizona now if you don't reject an application when it's not accompanied by proof of citizenship. So there's a citizenship provision in the Arizona law. You've got to prove you're a citizen. Now, the left has tried to fight about this and say, well, the Arizona law contradicts federal law, and that's being litigated out in court. But the Arizona law is in effect. So I'm reading articles that are very biased against these laws, because they're trying to make it look very unreasonable that these states are passing these laws. They quote Isabel Longoria, for example, the former lead election administrator in Houston. She goes, quote, "It feels to me like an outright attack on election officials just trying to do their job." Wait, what's your job? Filing false information on forms? Getting people to vote who are not eligible to vote? Mailing out ballots when you're not supposed to be mailing them out, when no request has come in from them? In other words, the laws are laws that are protecting the integrity of elections by carrying out the will of the legislature in each of those states. These are, by the way, democratically passed laws. They're laws that are far from being a sort of the left, it's an attack on democracy. What? This is an exercise of democracy. The Constitution assigns to the legislatures in each of the states the ability to make those laws. But again, here's the Brennan Center basically saying, this is a guy from the Brennan Center, this is debilitating for democracy. In other words, these are people who want to keep, you may almost call it cheating opportunities alive and well. These are bullying tactics. They're efforts to scare election officials away from doing what is their duty. And that's the heart of the matter. What is, in fact, their duty? Their duty is to administer these elections fairly. Their duty is not to pave the way for cheating. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health, exercising, climbing stairs, all the things that young people take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Now, Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. She's even able to do planks and push-ups. So Debbie's like, wow, I never want to be without this again. Now you too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. We're now in the Iliad, book 19. Patroclus is dead. His body has been retrieved by the Greeks. And we have a short but very touching scene of Briseis lamenting the death of Patroclus. Now, Briseis, you remember, is Achilles' concubine. And she was taken from Achilles by Agamemnon. But Agamemnon gives her back. And so she's now in Achilles' camp. Achilles, of course, is inconsolable over Patroclus' death. But Briseis speaks in Book 19 for the first and only time in the Iliad. And Homer writes, "When she saw Patroclus' mangled body, she threw herself upon him and wailed in a high, piercing voice." And this is now Briseis. "My poor Patroclus, you were so dear to me." And she goes on to say that, "I have seen my husband, the man my father and mother gave me to, mangled with sharp bronze before my city, and my three brothers, all from the same mother, brothers I love, they all died that day." This is very startling, because what Briseis is saying is that Achilles killed these people. Achilles killed her brothers. He killed her father. And it's kind of a grim reminder that slavery in the ancient world, in the ancient Greek world and in the Homeric world, is sexual slavery. So when your side loses in war, you become not just the slave in the sense of doing work and carrying water and doing knitting and mending. You become the sexual slave of some Greek master. And this was, in fact, Briseis' fate. And and yet, here she is, she says, quote, about Patroclus, "You wouldn't let me cry. You told me you'd make me Achilles' bride, told me you'd take me on a ship for a wedding among the Myrmidons." So Patroclus, in other words, here is consoling Briseis and basically saying, listen, this is the reality of war, but you will not be treated brutally. You will become, in a sense, you have, in a sense, a new husband, which is Achilles. Now, Achilles is not married. Briseis does not, in fact, marry Achilles. She does not become, in a formal sense, a bride. She's not like Andromache with Hector. But as we read this, by the way, our mind also fast forwards to Andromache. Why? Because we know how the Iliad is going to proceed. And the audience of the Iliad knew it too, that Hector will be killed by Achilles, just like Briseis' husband was. And Andromache will be, in that sense, a widow. And she will be dragged into slavery, and she will become the sex slave. This is the wife of the crown prince of Troy, will become the slave of some Greek master. And remember when Andromache and Hector had that conversation much earlier, in the very early part of the Iliad, before Hector went into battle, Andromache said, that I'm afraid. All I have is you, Hector, and I will be dragged into slavery if the Trojans are defeated and if you are killed and if you are not here to protect me. And Hector, in effect, says, this worries me. But I have to fight, because Hector's point is that is the way, or that is the only way, to try to protect you. And if Troy falls, there is nothing that any of us can do to protect the women or the children of Troy. So here we have this little vignette of Briseis. Now, interestingly, although she's speaking about the death of Patroclus, she speaks in a mourning lament, and our minds can't help but transfer some of this mourning to Achilles. Briseis is not lamenting Achilles. Achilles is not dead. But Achilles' death is coming. It's going to be the next sort of important death after Hector's. And so there's going to be another body, not mangled, but shot with an arrow. Achilles will lie as a corpse. And one can imagine, just as we saw just really a few pages earlier, we saw Thetis, Achilles' mother, again, lamenting for Patroclus, but holding her son Achilles in a prostrate position as if it were Achilles himself who were dead. So this is where the idea of Patroclus's death and Achilles' death are closely and inextricably connected.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
Right before Achilles re-enters the battle, he is approached by Agamemnon, who asks him, and I mentioned this a day or two earlier. Agamemnon tells Achilles, why don't you eat? Why don't you sleep? Why don't you sort of prepare yourself for battle? You're waiting for your new armor. But Achilles will not hear of any of that. And this stresses, in a sense, the abnormality of Achilles. He is not operating on the purely human level. He is, as I'm going to argue, suspended between the subhuman and the superhuman, or the godlike. And another indication of this is, again, Agamemnon trying to sort of make restitution, says to Achilles, hey, listen, the gifts that I promised you, you know what? I'm ready to turn them over to you. I'm here to promise you all of the gifts Odysseus proposed in your hut. And he says, my men are going to start bringing things from the ship so you can see the gifts before you sort of venture out to battle. I think Agamemnon thinks that this will please Achilles, and Achilles will be even more, now that he's getting his appropriate share of Team A, and a prelude to his kleos, his glory. Achilles is going to be like overcome with gratitude and sort of in the right mood. But Achilles' answer is indifferent. Here's Achilles: "Son of Atreus, most glorious Agamemnon, whether you offer me gifts as is right or keep them is your concern. War is mine." So Achilles now is going into war, but not for this reason at all. And Achilles is portrayed as entering war, enveloped in fire. Remember the scene that I talked about where Achilles shows himself to the Trojans and the gods create a kind of halo of fire behind him. We will find in the next couple of books in the Iliad, which are books of unstoppable killing. And the only one, by the way, doing the killing is going to be Achilles. No other casualties are described. Everybody who dies in these books, and it's about two books of the Iliad, is killed by Achilles and killed in every gruesome manner of being killed. And typically their bodies are thrown into the river. So Achilles kills without pity, without mercy, and I would say, in a sense, without any sort of boundary. And here what I mean is that Achilles kills even when he shouldn't kill. And this is really what I want to highlight. I'll give one example today and then perhaps the next one tomorrow. Achilles kills in a manner that is not appropriate, even by the standards of Homeric warfare, which are extremely brutal. So first, Achilles promises, as he is standing over the body of Patroclus, I mentioned before, he won't bury Patroclus. And this itself will turn out to be a big problem. Refusing to bury a dead body is very bad, because even though the fate of going to Hades or the underworld is not particularly attractive or pleasant, it is not as bad as an unburied corpse. The idea being that if you're unburied, you sort of are neither among the living nor among the dead. You have no proper place. You kind of are in this no man's land. And Achilles is risking having Patroclus be in that no man's land. But nevertheless, towering over the body of Patroclus, Achilles basically says, "I will sacrifice 12 Trojan princes before your pyre in my wrath." So he says, before we bury you, and I think he knows at some point they have to, he's like, "I'm going to do human sacrifice. I'm going to grab 12 Trojan youths, teenagers basically." And he says, quote, "I will cut the throats of 12 Trojan princes before your pyre in my wrath." Now, this is beyond the pale. And what I mean is that even in this, well, you can call it primitive, in some ways barbaric society, human sacrifice is not acceptable. We know this not only from Homer, but we know this from other sources in the ancient Greek world. Of course, we know in other cultures, the Aztecs, for example, going to the 16th century, there was human sacrifice. But not here, not in Homeric society. And so what Achilles is proposing to do here, and not just proposing, we will see later that when there is a, as it turns out, spectacular funeral for Patroclus, his funeral pyre is elevated, there are dancing girls, there are almost like an Olympic Games being held, chariot races, foot races, all this rigmarole to commemorate Patroclus. But there on the pyre, burning with Patroclus's lifeless body, are the bodies of 12 Trojan young boys whose throats have been cut by Achilles. So we see here the inhumanity of Achilles, and as a listener, as a viewer, our identification with Achilles is we are repulsed by this, pushed away from Achilles, and Homer has a problem as the bard. He's got to figure out a way before the Iliad ends to reintegrate Achilles into the human community from which he has rudely departed.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.